You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everybody. Some well-meaning promises and political pragmatism at the summit. And we're covering it this morning. Two big stories out of the Group of Eight meeting in Japan. Yesterday, the world's richest countries signed a pact to cut greenhouse emissions in half by 2050. Calling climate change one of the great global challenges of our time, the nations officially set a target that will be difficult to reach. They also revealed that eight is not enough. The richest nations on their own can't have an impact on issues like global warming without participation by other emerging nations. So if riches can't buy you a sustainable environment and eight nations are not enough to reach a useful consensus, perhaps the bigger story is, what do we call an international quorum in the 21st century? Joining us from Rusutsu on the island of Hokkaido is Cheryl Gay Stolberg of The New York Times, who's covering the summit. Cheryl, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
First of all, on the climate change agreement, who's on board, who's not, and how realistic is the goal?
Well, everybody's on board a little bit, and the goal is not what advocates would like, so we'll see how realistic it is. Essentially, the Group of Eight, the rich countries, said they want to cut carbon emissions in half by 2050. The poor countries say rich countries have to do more. They want wealthy nations to take aggressive steps to cut emissions over the next decade, and they haven't signed on yet to the 2050 target. Hmm. The whole thing goes to Copenhagen next year, where the UN is going to be negotiating an international binding treaty.
You know, what's interesting here is how this becomes a sort of preliminary round of something that the UN is going to take up. I mean, I alluded to it in the introduction. I mean, what we're seeing here, aside from a well-meaning attempt to deal with climate change, is also a transformation of international law. I mean, are the G8 agreements binding in any sense? Certainly, we've seen that the eight nations alone can't really do that much without a broader consensus.
Well, I think what we're seeing is a transformation in international relations. The G8 agreements aren't binding on anybody. They never have been. And in a way, that's what makes this meeting significant. What makes it significant is the fact that countries across the spectrum, rich and poor, have come together around this issue of climate change to lay the groundwork for something, the groundwork for something that the UN can later do. And that actually is important, and it hasn't happened before. So at least these countries now are on record as saying, yeah, this is a problem, and we intend to do something about it.
You know, somehow the non-binding nature of the G8 summit and the participation by the so-called G5, it seems to me, encourages a kind of candor that might not be possible if we were having to nail things down in a more UN-formalized process. But do you see any sense that this going from non-binding to binding process is becoming more formalized, that initiatives begin in a place like the G8 and then make their way to the UN, and that this is what we're going to be seeing more and more of over the century?
Well, I wouldn't say this place is rife with candor. I mean, if you read these communiques, they're more bureaucratic gobbledygook than one person could possibly absorb. And that's because the people who write them know that they're going to be taken seriously and that they are going to be examined by the UN. And these documents are, in essence, a recommendation to the UN from these countries saying, this is what we think you ought to do. This is what we're putting forward. So they're very carefully negotiated. And they do carry weight for that reason if they are non-binding.
Do you see an 8 plus 5, the G13 by 2050?
You know, it's funny, part of me thinks that they ought to just ditch this whole G8. In fact, I asked at a press conference yesterday of non-governmental organizations, I said, why do they even have this meeting? It's grown so unwieldy. You've got the G8, then you have this so-called Outreach 5, and now we have the major emitting nations, which are 16 plus the European Union. I mean, it's kind of like a mini UN here. Why do they bother? And the answer came back that, the process of having the G8 is important. And in fact, it was the G8 process that moved President Bush to really start taking up the issue of climate change. He'd meet with these leaders, and they'd pressure him, leaders like Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, and his buddy Tony Blair in Britain.
Right. Who the president called a constructive force for change yesterday, Angela Merkel. Cheryl Gay Stolberg of The New York Times, thanks for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
Cheryl is covering the G8 summit on Rutsutsu, which is on the island of Hokkaido, which closes today.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.